All right, I'm glad everybody can make it in for the Bible study. I'll open up in prayer. If everybody go ahead and bow your heads. Dear great merciful God, we come before you so very thankful for this opportunity to come together on your holy day, your feast day, where we know that you have a perfect plan for us in store. And every year we get to go through your plan of bringing us into your family, making us part of your divine family and helping us to get there. And this reminder of what we're doing, you know, we just come through the days of unleavened bread where we don't eat anything with leavening as a symbol of the removing sin out of our lives. And now we have the big job of doing that the rest of the year. And as we get into this day where you just ask that you be with the Bible study, help us to open our hearts and our minds, help me to give it in a easy to understand way so that we can apply this and really make it part of who we are. That's everything that we're trying to do in this world, in this life that you've given us. It's a physical life of trying to be more like Jesus Christ, and that what that is just putting on your nature, putting on everything it is that makes you who you are. And so we just ask that you be with those who are still going to be traveling today. We ask that you be with all those who are going to have services around the world, because this is such a foundational day for all of your people. And we love you, and we ask all of this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen. All right, so I put together a Bible study that's going to reach back to the beginning of the week. It's an interesting topic because there's a lot of different ideas of what's going on. I threw together a PowerPoint, so hopefully that'll help with this. But today what I want to do is I want to address a critical question that is always good to consider. It's always good to evaluate and look at it. And the reason being is because it runs hand in hand with one of the oldest controversies of the Bible. It's the timing of the Exodus, the timing of the Passover and the Exodus, when the meal took place, when all that happened, in correlation to how Jesus Christ upheld it, when Jesus Christ did it. We have there's several different ideas. I'll get to a couple of those later. I'll put it up on the screen. Like I said, I put together the PowerPoint to try to make this as easy as possible to follow. But this all stems back to the idea that Jesus Christ actually changed the timing of the Passover. That last Passover that he kept with the apostles, he actually adjusted the time in order to actually line up in the correct time frame. But what I want to do today, as we go through this, as we talk about this, what we're going to get down into is, was the Passover held on the 14th or the 15th? Was it held on the 14th or the 15th? And we're talking about the Passover and the Exodus, the Passover lamb, when it would have been slaughtered, when it would have been eaten. Was that on the evening of the 14th or was it on the evening of the 15th? Was it eaten at night? Was it eaten during the day? We have this time period with the Exodus and with Israelites in Egypt at that time. We can look at it and go, does it even matter? Does it matter? Everything matters, right? When we're talking about the Bible, when we're talking about the pattern that God set, the timing that God set, we can say about anything. Do the holy days matter? Does the Sabbath matter? We can go through a whole long list of things that the world goes, well, it's not that big of a deal, because we've changed the meaning. And we look at it and go, no, it is a big deal. We can't just change what we want. We can't just make different ideas out of different things. And so we talk about this, of when this Passover would have been eaten, that first Passover with the Israelites still in Egypt. It's a question of history and chronology. There's too many O's and L's in there. History and chronology, the timing of everything that played out with the Israelites. Things that help us is understanding some of the words and some of the phrases that are used in Exodus and Deuteronomy and Numbers as we go through some of those scriptures. Today, we don't have time to get into all of them. So we're not going to cover all the different words, all the different Hebrew words and what it means and go through the long list. I'll try to touch on one that we can look at today. One of the big ones that we aren't going to talk about is evening to evening. That's the timing of the sun setting versus the timing of darkness. And you get into a whole big mix of different ideas and when that timing actually fell. A lot of different debates and a lot of different ideas. And I just honestly can't cover it in 45 minutes. And so I'm going to weed through and try to get as much as I can to really make this as simple to understand, because when we look at the timing, we're going to really see that there wasn't anything changed. It's a consistent pattern. Just like with what God does most of the time, there's a consistent pattern in everything that he does. And if we're wise enough and we're smart enough, if we're humble enough, we can end up rooting it out and seeing how he is consistent without making our own assumptions. Christ set that perfect example. In every aspect of who he was, what he did, how he did it, he was consistent with following God's instructions, and he was consistent with being the perfect sacrifice. Now, this is one of those things that falls into that same guidelines as to who he was and why we can rely on him as our Savior. And we just came through this week, beginning with Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread, of really relying on God's plan, relying on Jesus Christ, and then recognizing that we have a part to get sin out of our lives. There's change that has to take place with us. And that started way back with this instructions given to Israel in Egypt. And so when we teach the observance of the New Testament Passover at the beginning of the 14th, the evening section of the 14th day, we're following Christ's example. We're following the pattern that he set for us. Not that it just changed it, but that he had it set up perfectly. There's this infographic here that we have as a church up on the screen. And what this does, generally, most of the time, we use this one when we're having discussions about Easter in comparison to Easter. Because this is one of the easiest infographics that we have in showing the Good Friday, Easter Sunday idea versus the timing of when Christ actually kept the Passover, when he was arrested, when he was crucified, and then when he was resurrected. And so this is lined up, this lines it up. You can find it out on our website, but that's the one of the most times that I see this used. It's in that discussion with Easter and the resurrection being on Sunday morning versus God's timeline of when it actually occurred. But we can rest assured that when Christ set his example for us to follow, he did it in the evening. And what you'll see on the far left side, it has it columned out between the evening and the day portions. But this is the example that we follow. As the United Church of God, this is the pattern. This is the example. This is our methodology for why we keep Passover on the evening of the 14th, which is the beginning of the 14th. We'll talk about that in a little bit as far as the days and the timing and counting goes. But this is the structure that we follow, that Jesus Christ was crucified on a Wednesday afternoon. He died right before sunset, and therefore he was resurrected right before sunset on the Sabbath, on the Saturday. It wasn't a Sunday resurrection like many believe today. So there's a couple of scriptures, and when we start talking about whether or not wasn't sure if you'll be able to read that. Oh, good. It is big enough. It's always hard on your little computer screen or whether or not it's actually going to blow up enough so you can see it. These are accounts that make it quite clear that what Jesus Christ and his disciples were observing was truly the Passover. It was actually the Passover that they were keeping the evening before he died. This wasn't a time shift. This wasn't It's just a special meal that he had to have these get together. You can go ahead and flip over to Matthew chapter 26 and verse 17. I want to read through a couple of these just to establish this timeline and this idea that what Christ was keeping, he was very purposeful. The words and the terminology that he uses, he was keeping the Passover. If Christ was crucified on Passover day, then the event occurred during the evening at the beginning of the 14th, which is what we just looked at with the infographic before. This is Matthew chapter 26. If you look at verse 17 here. Here it says, I'm in chapter 27. That doesn't help me any. I'm a day late. It says, "Now on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Jesus saying to him, 'Where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover?' And he said, go into the city to a certain man and say to him, the teacher says, my time is at hand. I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples. And so the disciples did as Jesus had directed them, and they prepared the Passover. So he says this is the Passover. You can flip over to Mark chapter 14. We find the same thing. It's going to be a little redundant as we go through these Gospels because we're seeing this pattern of what they heard, what they were doing with him, what they were getting ready to experience with him. Now, they had no idea that these symbols were getting ready to change. They had no idea what they were about to face, which is what we do with the New Testament Passover today with the bread and the wine. They were expecting a general Passover meal like they had been doing, but things were about to change for them. But here, if you look at Mark chapter 14 and verse 12, here's another account. It says, now on the first day of unleavened bread, when they had killed the Passover lamb, his disciples said to him, where do you want us to go and prepare that you may eat the Passover? And he sent out two of his disciples and said to them, go into the city. A man will meet you carrying a pitcher of water. Follow him wherever he goes in. Say to the master of the house, the teacher says, where is the guest room in which I may eat the Passover with my disciples? So again, slightly different, but the same context. Christ is saying this is the Passover. They actually had just slaughtered the lamb right before this one. That's what's so nice about the Gospels, right? We get little pieces of information from each one of them. They keep adding on. They complement each other. And then one more. If you look over at Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22 and verse 8. This is the final one of the Gospels, and then we'll look at that last one in 1 Corinthians, and we'll take a look at what Paul writes. This is Luke chapter 22. If you look at verse 8, actually, we pick it up in verse 7. That way we see the same context, the same wording again. It says, then came the day of unleavened bread, when the Passover must be killed. And he sent Peter and John, saying, go prepare for the Passover for us, that we may eat. So they said to him, where do you want us to prepare? And again, in verse 10 down, we see that same pattern. He's saying, go follow this man, the pitcher of water, go into the house. He has a guest room set up. And that's where we'll do it. So we have the Gospels. We have these three Gospel accounts which are making it clear that Christ is saying, this is the Passover. This is when I'm keeping it. This is what we are keeping. We see the lamb being prepared. We see all the steps taking place that this is the correct time frame. When we think about it, did Christ ever break any of God's commands? Again, this is Bible study. Feel free to yell at me, raise hands. Never. Never. Right. Never. He never once even broke one of God's commands. He was perfect. He was a perfect piece in God's perfect plan. And without that, without his perfection, then we're still sinners. We have no sacrifice without the perfection. And so everything that he did measured up to exactly what God expected to do, with these standards that God has set. Christ wouldn't ever do anything contrary to God's way of life. He wouldn't change things just because the timing wasn't convenient or it didn't work out. He wouldn't do that. That's not how Christ works. It's not how God works. He's very methodical, right? They created this plan before we were ever created. Therefore, they planned for everything. This wasn't the last minute, oh, well, how's this going to work? He's already going to be dead by the time they're supposed to be taking the Passover, so let's just shift it forward. And then we'll make it real confusing because then the New Testament doesn't align with the Old Testament. That's not how God works. He's very purposeful in everything that he does. And go ahead and you can flip over to this last one, 1 Corinthians chapter 11. And this is Paul here talking to the church at Corinth. Because Scripture concludes that Christ observed something called the Passover the night before he died. They're very specific with the wording. This would have been the evening at the beginning of the 14th day. Hopefully on the first day of unleavened bread, anybody who was at Passover, you know, we went through a lot of those scriptures talking about going through Exodus and looking at the timing of the days that all that came together. This is 1 Corinthians. If you look at chapter 11 and verse 23. It says, "For I received from the Lord that which I also delivered to you." So Paul's saying, I got this from Christ, now I'm passing it on to you. He goes, this is the line of command, this is where these words came from. He says, "That the Lord Jesus, on the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body which is broken for you, do this in remembrance of me.' In the same manner, he also took the cup after supper, saying, 'This is the cup of the new covenant, my blood. This do as often as you drink it in remembrance of me.'" So this is where Paul is referencing those symbol changes. It's why we don't continue to slaughter lambs and make sacrifices. It's because we already have the perfect sacrifice. Up to that point, all of those people who existed before Christ's death, they didn't have that perfect sacrifice. And so they needed to maintain that status quo of that symbolism leading up to Christ. But now he is in this position where he goes, these are the symbols. This bread is my body and this wine is my blood, and I am what leads you to salvation. That changed everything for us. That changed everything for them. Because this was all new. So when we look at this pattern, when we look at the plan of what God's doing, we have to realize and recognize that this is all within the law of God. Because he gave very clear commands to the Israelites of when these events were to take place, on what days they were to take place. He was very specific. He was very structured with how those were going to be. And so we have to remember that all of this that Jesus Christ does falls in line with God's expectations, God's will. So here's a couple different options. These are different ideas that float around there of what it is. Some feel strongly that Christ kept the Passover, a type of Passover, earlier than it needed to be. Because otherwise he would have been dead, and he couldn't keep the Passover at all. So he had to shift the timing. My sheet, I can't read it. My printer ink is all wonky. So I was going to read these for you. Don't know if my eyes are quite good enough to read. All right, so the first one, it says, Christ was observed for the Passover as he had always observed it, at least with his disciples. And at the time, he had always observed it. So he was consistent, right? This is the idea that he had done it one specific way. He continued to do it that way. And then that's the pattern that we see. That's the way he had always done it. The second one, Christ did not observe the Passover since he was dead before it occurred. It was some sort of pre-Passover meal eaten the night before. This would seem to contradict the clear scriptures that called this event Passover. That's why I just took you through the gospel accounts in 1 Corinthians to make it a clear delineation that Christ said this is the Passover, not this is a pre-Passover meal or something leading up to what the Passover would be. He was very specific. Another idea, Christ made an exception and kept the Passover a day early to set an example for our observance in the New Testament Passover. So again, because he was going to be dead when it should have been done, he moves it, he shifts it. Number four, during the time of the Second Temple, it was equally acceptable to eat the Passover at either the beginning of the 14th or the beginning of the 15th. And then the fifth one, Christ made no change in the observance of Passover. The Pharisees had it correct, and we should be following the Jewish practice today and keep it on the 15th. There's different groups, different ideas of which ones of these follow. When that official date is, that is technically the Passover. But when we look at all these, we can see why it gets so confusing, because there's different scholars and different groups that have different ideas of how this took place, why it took place. We could easily rationalize and say, oh yeah, makes sense. If Christ was going to be dead, he kind of had to shift things. He had to make an exception for something. One of the things that we can consider, though, is if he was modifying. And think about this. If Christ and the apostles at this time were modifying the tradition, they were modifying the standard. For one, when Christ said, go prepare the Passover, the apostles would have been going, wait a second, timing's not right. What are we doing? This is the wrong day. Two, the man's house who they used would have been going, hey, this is, what are you doing? This is the wrong day. You got your stuff, you got your wires crossed. So there would have been some pushback to some degree, right? So that's one of the things that we can look at and say, all right, maybe there's more to this. Maybe there's more to the understanding of this. By what we find in the Bible, by the scriptures that we have, by the examples that Christ set, we lean towards option number one. That Christ did it the way that he was supposed to do it, the way that he had always done it. He wasn't changing anything, he wasn't modifying it, but he was sticking to the standard. And what we're going to look at here in a minute is that actually goes all the way back to the Exodus. It matches the timing. It matches the timing. It would have been a lot of issues with some of these things as the moving pieces that if Christ was doing this at a different time than everybody else. If he was the only one out of place. One of the things, I told you I don't have time to get into all the details of this, but at this point in time, from the accounts that we have, it looks like the Sadducees were in control of the temple. They had the authority over the temple. But the Pharisees had authority over all the synagogues. So you have these two major leading powers having different ideas. I don't know if you've ever looked into it, but the Pharisees and Sadducees had different ideas as to what day Pentecost was on. That's one of the disputes that they always fought about. So it wouldn't be uncommon to think this would be another timing issue that the Sadducees and the Pharisees didn't coincide with. And so if Christ did this at a time, and there were some people who were already doing it this time, it wouldn't have been that big of a deal. No, we never see Christ address the timing of Passover. And so sometimes people say, well, he would have corrected this. Well, he didn't with Pentecost. So maybe this was one of those things where he goes, no, I'm going to do what the standard is. I'm going to set the tempo of what we're supposed to be doing. And there's no reason to get into these disputes. Now, there were enough disputes. There were enough arguments that they had about the Sabbath and other things that this may just have been one of those things that Christ said, I'm not going to address it now. There's no point in this. And so this is one of those scenarios where we go, okay, this makes sense of why Christ and the apostles could have kept the Passover on the correct night without bringing up too much attention. Even though we know that it was likely that the Pharisees were still doing some sacrifices on the 15th as they get into that. One of the other things that we lean towards is there was not a consistent observance of Passover in the Old Testament. There was a time frame, you can flip back, actually, you know what, I'll just quote it for you. You don't have to go there. I don't even know how I'm doing on time. Okay. So, it's 2 Chronicles chapter 30 and verse 5. This is one of those points, as Hezekiah is king, we find this where it describes that the Passover had not been kept correctly for a long time. Whether that means it was kept correctly at all, because what it says it wasn't kept in a prescribed manner. And so Hezekiah gets back on doing a consistent Passover. And so we know there are gaps in the Old Testament. We know there's gaps in what people believed and what the Israelites kept at different times. And so we don't see a 100% consistent pattern throughout the ages of what they were doing. And so that creates some additional confusion about the timing. So one of the things we have to talk about when we talk about challenges and when we talk about what creates some of the difficulties that we have to overcome when we're understanding the Passover and when it's truly observed, how does God track days? Sunset to sunset, right? Now, I told you earlier, that word sunset, that gets into a debate, and that goes much deeper than I have time to get into today, with what that actually means. The word of evening to evening, it is Bein Arba'im. That means between the two evenings. And so that's where people start saying, okay, does that mean as the sun's going down? Does that mean right at sunset? Does that mean when it actually gets dark, right? Because at sunset, we have that time period between when the sun sets and when between it's actually dark outside, it's black. Is it that time? What is this time frame? And that's a whole big debate. Like I said, I don't have the time to get into it today, but I do want to clarify what the days. Because God's very specific in the Bible about how he counts time, and it's sunset to sunset. We didn't have electricity back in these times, and so the sun was a very important piece of making their day. You couldn't do work outside after sunset, or at least for not very long, right? There was a small window after sunset that you had time to finish up, and then it was dark. And the only light you had was what you could carry or the fires that you could make. And so when we think about how we are today, how do our days run? Midnight to midnight, right? And so what comes first? Our day portion, right? When we wake up in the morning for work, that's our day portion. And then at the end of our work day, or at the end of our school day, whatever it may be, we get to come home and we enjoy the evening. And we enjoy that until dark. We can go a little bit after dark, but then we go to sleep, and then we wake up the next day. And so that's some of the confusion with how people track this, is the fact that our calendar, the way that we work, we have our day portion first and then the evening portion. But the way that God tracks this is sunset to sunset. So the dark portion, the evening portion, is actually the beginning of his days. He set that at creation. If we go through the creation account, every time he set the day, he goes, and it was evening and morning. He always set the evening portion first. Evening and then morning. And we find consistency throughout the Bible. One of the ones that we're going to look at, you can look at Deuteronomy chapter 23 and verses 10 and 11 real quick with me. This is pertaining to cleanliness. An individual was unclean until sunset. This is Deuteronomy chapter 23. If you look at verses 10 and 11. So this marked the beginning of that new day. Verse 10. You know what? Pick it up at verse 9. This is talking, that 9 is included here. It says, when the armies go out against your enemies, then keep yourselves from every wicked thing. If there is any man among you who becomes unclean by some occurrence in the night, then he shall go outside the camp. He shall not come inside the camp. But it shall be when evening comes, he shall wash with water, and when the sun sets, he may come into the camp. So we have this time frame. He's saying, okay, in the middle of night, if you become unclean during war, he goes, right before sunset, so it's already dark, so it can't sunset again, right? So that means he goes through that whole day portion, unclean, outside the camp. Says you can't be around anybody else because you may infect everybody. He goes, and then as you come into sunset, you come, you wash, and then at sunset, you're clean. The beginning of the next day. The beginning of the new day. And so we see that darkness, that sunset time, and we find this in several Jewish sources that while there may be some issues with it, it seems that there's this consistency, especially when we compare the Sabbath day and creation and some of these accounts. And we'll look at one more in a little bit. When we began our holy day last night at sunset, we still follow that pattern that God has set. So here is a little graphic breaking down Egypt. So we looked at the first infographic. It was set around Christ's sacrifice. This is what it would have been like with some of the scriptures. And we're going to walk through some of these verses here. But this chart shows support for the 14th as the day that the lamb leading up to the 14th and when the lamb was slaughtered. And then it was the evening portion of the 14th when the lamb would have been eaten. And it took place before the Israelites departed Egypt. And so I want to walk through some of this alignment, because when you think about the questioning of how Christ did it, if he did it wrong, what we find is that when Christ does it, it aligns exactly with the way the Israelites did it. The same pattern that they observed, he was observing hundreds of years later. So the first one I want to go to, head over to Exodus chapter 12. This is Exodus chapter 12. You look at verses 6 through 8. We'll walk through several pieces of this, because this really, it's not as tricky as it seems. When we really fine-tune and understand some of the things, like the days of when they're talking about days, what day they're talking about, we start to see how this works out. So the first one here, this is Exodus chapter 12. If you look at verses 6 through 8, it says, "Now you shall keep it until the 14th day." And so he's talking about the sheep or the goat. "You shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel..." Well, you know what? Let me back up. Because I want to give a little bit additional. I want to show, I don't want to just reference it. Look at, I guess just pick up verse 5, not 6. That way you can see what this lamb is, this unblemished lamb. Verse 5, it says, "Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats." And then verse 6, it says, "Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the seventh of the same month. The whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight." So this lamb or this sheep is picked, the sheep or goat is picked out on the 10th day. And it says you are to keep it until the 14th. You keep it up to that point. It was selected on the 10th day of the month, and then it was kept till the 14th. I haven't looked into this enough. I know there have been pastors throughout the years. Some of my family, we were actually talking about this, trying to see if somebody had asked if there was information, if any of us had information. There are some scholars, there are some ideas that this lamb was actually brought into the house, that this lamb was treated as part of the family. On the 10th day, it was taken in. It was treated like a child, part of the family, part of that group. It was kept that way until the 14th. Again, I haven't looked into it enough to find if there's enough evidence to prove that. But when you think about what this sacrifice is, what this is symbolic of, I go, okay, that seems reasonable. But don't take my word for it. Do your own research. You can look through some of the history to see if there's validity to that. But there was something special about this sheep or this goat. It wasn't just an unblemished animal. It was supposed to be something significant for that family. And so it was like a child. The important word in here, I told you we're not going to look at all the words, but there's one here that I do want to look at. I tried to bold it. I don't know if it popped up. It says, and if you look at verse 6, it says, "Now you shall keep it until the 14th. It says until the 14th. Now, in not every case in the Hebrew does that not include up to or past that point. But when you think about it, even in our language today, for our younger ones, our teens and our preteens, if I said, "Hey, you're grounded until next week," does that mean you're grounded this week and next week? No, it means you're grounded up until that point in time, and then going forward, you're ungrounded. This was the same with this lamb. It was to be held up until the 14th, not to include the 14th. So that lamb was most likely slaughtered right before sunset, right around that time period as we're getting into the 14th day, so that it then could be cooked, and then it would have been eaten for that Passover. That would have been their meal as the Egyptians are losing all their firstborns. A significant thing in the history of the Egyptians, a significant moment for the Israelites. But we have this biblical example. If you head over now to Leviticus 11, you can hold your finger here. But in Leviticus 11, we find another example of this. of where it doesn't include that end marker, just up to that point. This is Leviticus chapter 11. If you look at verses 24 and 25. Pick up, 24. It says, "By these you shall be become unclean. Whoever touches the carcass of a carcass of any of them shall be unclean until evening. Whoever carries part of the carcass of any of them shall Whoever carries part of the carcass of any of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening." So similar to the men at war, this says that time frame is they're unclean until evening. Once you get into evening, you're no longer unclean. That was that time period that God says you need to make sure you don't have any diseases, that you're not carrying anything, and that you're not going to start having some weird things come out your nose. He says, this is the time frame, up to evening, and then you're clean after that. And so we see the importance of this word, until, because it gives us the timing of when that lamb was to be kept, up to the 14th, the beginning of that day. As it's getting evening, right, that's what we have to remember. That's why we went through sunset to sunset. That evening portion of the 14th is the beginning of the day, is the first part of their day. So we clearly see that the sun set and it began that new day and they were no longer unclean. That's a new set of days for them. That's the same Hebrew word that we find back in Exodus. It's the same word that they use. So leading up to it, it's odd. It's that middle section, the middle column I have there. Odd at Strong's H5704. Some of the other things are as far as, even to, until, up to. That up to point of when that lamb was to be kept. So to think that that lamb was kept all the way until the 15th, you're talking about 24 hours later. If that Passover was going to be eaten at the very end of the 14th into the 15th, then you're talking about a 24-hour shift. We're going to go through some things here in just a minute that really define that can't take place. That can't happen with the way the Israelites kept this. So go back to Exodus now. If you go back to Exodus chapter 12. I told Fort Wayne last week, I have to be really careful in this part of the Bible because all my pieces are out. Sometimes it likes to fall out of my Bible. So if I ever lose track, you'll know it's because I have wrong pages that got mixed up and I didn't realize it. And then I've got like 15 before 12 and it becomes a mess. But I've been pretty good lately of keeping it together. So if you look at verse 7 of chapter 12. So they're keeping that animal up to the 14th. So we have this time frame. It's the beginning of the 14th day. It's right around sunset. And this is what they're supposed to do. This is why they slaughtered that lamb or that goat. If you look at verse 7, it says, "And they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the house where they eat it. Then they shall eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire with unleavened bread and with bitter herbs they shall eat it." And then if you drop down to verse 21, because that's the next thing we're going to look at. So this lamb, or this sheep, it was used as this sacrifice. This was the blood that went on the doorpost that would tell God to pass over this house. So we start to see this full timing start to come together. Because if that was done on the 15th, then that completely shifts the day that the Passover took place. Now, Exodus chapter 12, if you look at verse 21, it says, I've got these up on the screen for you too. It says, "Then Moses called for all the elders of Israel, said to them, pick out, take the lambs for yourselves according to your families, and kill the Passover lamb." Verse 22. And you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is on the basin, and strike it on the lintel of the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin. And none of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. So we get a little extra piece of information here, right? Not just put the blood on the doorposts. When Moses is given the instructions, he says, don't leave the house until morning. Because you don't want to be out of the house. It will end really bad for you. Why? Because that blood was their covering. That blood was their protection to say, these are my people. They are covered. They are protected. They are exempt from this final plague. This 10th plague of death is not going to impact them. He says, if you're found outside your home, all bets are off. All bets are off at that point. So Israel, so we have the 10th to the 14th, up to the 14th is when they kill that lamb, they paint it on the doorpost, and they say, don't come out until morning. So now we're at the beginning of the 14th, the daylight portion, we're going all the way through. He says, don't come out until the end of the 14th, because that's the daylight portion, right? The daylight portion of the 14th is when they say, don't come out of your house until this point in time. Pretty similar to what Jesus Christ kept. When we think about that final Passover, he kept the Passover at the beginning of the 14th, at night, with the apostles. He was taken captive that night, and then it was that next day that he was beaten and brutalized and crucified. That daylight portion. So I want to finish up a little bit of the story here, because we have more than just this idea of when the Passover was killed, when it was painted on the doorpost, when they weren't allowed to leave the house. Because at one point, some people are skeptical of this because Pharaoh actually sends for Moses in the middle of the night. All of this death happens. They think it was about midnight, so that would have been still quite a bit of darkness left. All of this death is happening. This isn't a slow process. It says firstborns die. Dead. All of it happens at one time. And it says not a household of Egypt was untouched. And so all of this agony, all of this turmoil is going on. Pharaoh sends for Moses. But we never see Moses leaving the house. He sends this messenger who tells Moses what he's supposed to tell him, to get out of Egypt. We don't want you here anymore. Go. But we never see it. We never see Moses leave that house. He knew what the commandment was. But some say because he was told this request that they went ahead and left. That they went ahead and left that night. But that doesn't align with what happens. That doesn't align with the rest of the story of what we find. To go along with that, verse 11 is one of these pieces that people try to use and say they left that same night. If you look back to verse 11, I know I'm jumping back and forth a little bit, but it's because these pieces are matched up at different alignments. And we kind of get this full story by looking at this not in chronological order as far as just reading through the verses. If you look at verse 11, it says, actually, back up to 10. That way you can see where this is coming from. It says, you shall let none of it remain until morning. So it's talking about that lamb that they were just eating. And what remains of it until morning, you shall burn with fire. So remember, they weren't supposed to leave the house till morning. So it's matching up with that. But then in verse 11, it says, and thus you shall eat it with a belt on your waist, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. So you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. So this is where they get the idea that, and they start to stretch and say, okay, what's the point in telling them to be ready to walk out the door if he's going to have them wait till the next day, a whole 24-hour period? And so between Pharaoh sending the messenger in the middle of night, and between this instruction of be prepared, right, be dressed, be ready to go, they start to get this idea of, well, maybe they did leave that night. Maybe they kept the Passover, they ate the meal, and then they went ahead and left. But that still doesn't align with, he says, burn it in the morning. Don't come out until the morning, and then anything that wasn't consumed, eaten, it says destroyed in the morning. none of it shall be left. So we start to be able to debunk some of these ideas. Some of these, okay, well that doesn't align. Now if we think about the next period, think about your feast traveling, right? When we're getting ready, we're getting ready. Like 24 hours before it's go time, as a kid, we used to actually sleep in the van. We had a 15-passenger van, so my dad would take the last bench seat out. There were only four of us boys, and so the youngest one always got the floor. We would sleep in the van because we left super early. And it's kind of the same idea, right? We're ready to go. When it's coming up on the feast, we don't want to wait around. We're not playing games. And it was nice because dad would get in. We'd be like 3-4 hours down the road before we'd ever even wake up. It was perfect. But for them, God was letting them know, hey, there's a lot of stuff getting ready to go. Not that they were leaving that night, but he was getting them ready, says, hey, we don't have time for you to play around. Like, things are going to happen fast. And we see that happen fast, right? The fact that Pharaoh sent his messenger close to midnight, like right after this happened, he's going, get out. I'm done. You go do your God thing. We're done with this. Get out of here. We see the expediency now with Pharaoh and what is happening. But this is part of the evidence that we have for understanding that the Passover that Christ kept was correct. That it did align perfectly. So now we're going to look at a couple pieces that help us to really solidify this. For Fort Wayne, some of this should look similar because we went through it last week. The first one is over in Numbers chapter 33. We'll look at one here in Numbers and one in Deuteronomy. I took you guys through these when we were talking about the night to be much observed. But it really helps us with the time frame of how all of this unfolds. This is Numbers chapter 33. Is the first one in the first couple of verses there. Verse 1, it says, these are the journeys of the children of Israel who went out of the land of Egypt by their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. Now Moses wrote down the starting points of the journeys at the command of the Lord. And these are the journeys according to their starting points. They departed from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the first month. On the day after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of all the Egyptians. So here it starts to become really clear of what day they actually left. When did they leave? 15th, right? There's not much questions about this. So if the Passover was on the 14th, they kept it on the night portion. That means they had the day portion. That day portion would have been that time frame where they plundered the Egyptians. That's when they went and asked for the gold and the silver and the clothing. So that's why God said, be ready, be dressed, be ready to go. Because as soon as daybreak happens, you're burning the remains and then you're plundering. You get your stuff, you load up your wagons. Yeah, they sound like pirates, don't they? I see the chuckling. But it's what it was. God goes, they're going to give you everything just to get you out of here. Like, they don't want anything to do with you. And so they plundered them. They took what they could get. God says they found favor in the sight of the Egyptians just to get them out. And so that daylight portion, they spend getting their wagons, getting their animals. We're talking 2 to 3 million people. Because it says there were 600,000 men. They estimate anywhere from 2 to 3 million people, not including all the livestock. To feed 2 to 3 million people, you need a lot of livestock. So it would have been a big process. It would have been a big caravan of what they would have had to have done. And then we find that it says they left on the 15th. So that would have been that night, which is what we're about to see. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 16 and verse 1. It's Deuteronomy. If you look at chapter 16, Verse 1, it says, observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to the Lord your God. For in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. It didn't come out by day, so it wasn't at the morning when they left. It couldn't have been the 14th. It couldn't have been the night they said to do the Passover, because God says, don't come out of the house. Otherwise, your firstborn die. So we had the day portion, and Deuteronomy adds this last piece of the puzzle that says they left by night. What night? The night of the 15th. At sunset, it was the new day, the 15th, beginning the night portion. That's when they left. That's how God's plan works. That's how Israel fled Egypt. The 14th, the beginning of the 14th was Passover. Through the night, they stayed in their houses. At daybreak, they got ready to go. It took them all day. Like I said, talking about millions of people. Millions of people. It's bigger than the population of Indianapolis. It's like two to three times the size of Indianapolis. Do you imagine how long it'd take to get all of Indianapolis up and together and to just walk out? This isn't a 10-minute job of let's go get in the van. It's going to take all day to get things ready. And not just themselves walk out. They were taking all of their belongings. They needed that whole day to get ready to go. And we see that they left on the 15th at night. They left at the beginning of the 15th day. There was no changing of the timeline. There was no changing of how Christ observed the Passover from the original timing of the Passover. Christ kept it just as the Israelites kept it. He kept it perfect. He set the tone for us. And when we circle back, there isn't a new timing in the New Testament. The New Covenant doesn't have a new timing for the Passover. It's consistent with what God did with Israel. We see the same things. We see new symbols, but we see the same timing, the same days being kept. We see the ultimate sacrifice. And so it's not really as confusing as it sometimes seems. And it's easy to get distracted with some of the little pieces and odds and ends here and there because people can pull out a scripture here or a scripture there. I didn't have time to go into all of them. There's lots of different little pieces that they go. Like, have your belt around your waist and your sandals on because you need to leave now. It's easy to jump to that until we put together all the other pieces. And once we do, we see the timing of that. And Christ kept it perfect, just like he always did.